Now, if you've been here before, it's not a mystery to you that I like to talk about mysteries, especially the ones that seem to jump the pond, the ones that go from the old world to the new world and that hold similar iconography. These things, they tantalize me. To me, this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where all of a sudden it's like, you know, if you're going to say that these two cultures were disconnected for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, you got to explain why they use similar symbolism to explain semi-similar things. This is the kind of thing that if you found them within 1,000 miles of each other, you would absolutely say, oh, one influenced the other. But when you see them across the pond, well, people are like, well, I'm not, I don't know. And you understand why. At the same time, it still does beggar belief. Now, there's a guy by the name of Graham Langdon. Now, I've mentioned his work numerous times. As a matter of fact, I've had him on the channel once for a hangout. You should check that out after you watch this video, because you'll probably want to see what more he has to say, because he's wrote a book about the naval holding statues. And if you've looked at Easter Island or at Göbekli Tepe or Karan Tepe or any of these places, you'll notice that the hands on these statues tend to grab towards the belly. And some people might say, well, this is the easiest way to carve a statue, and I would say that's stupid. You could put the arms straight down at the sides, would technically be easier now, wouldn't it? Or have them crossed with the fingers interlaced so you didn't carve the fingers. That would even be easier, wouldn't it? But it would portray a different emotion, different idea. Now, Graham has gone through a ton of work to detail this stuff. As a matter of fact, he sent me his book about, I'd say, 8 months to a year ago, and asked me to proofread it. Full disclosure, he paid me to proofread it. I, of course, I had to read the book then, and I was, to be honest with you, blown away. I had to read it a second time to actually do the proofreading, because once I started reading, I was just like, oh, this is really good. So I'm going to leave a link to it in the description. And I reached out to Graham before I started making this video and told him, hey, I'm going to plagiarize a little bit here. I'm going to steal some of his stuff and just kind of regurgitate it. Now, I'm going to put it in my own words, and I'm going to give you my own two bits here, but I think it's really important to give credit where credit is due, because Graham has done a lot of work compared to me in this regard. He's traveled to so many... Look at the list of different countries in the table of contents of his book, okay? He's been around the world, okay, to see these things, and he put together a very, very compelling case. And I'm going to go through a big chunk of that here, and I'm going to leave you wanting more, because when I finished his book, I was left wanting more as well. But this is one of the most robust cases for cross-continental, old world, new world connection before Columbus, before the Vikings even, that I've ever seen. And again, Graham Langdon has done a very good job putting this together. Link is in Amazon and his stuff, and he did not pay me to do this part. This is me saying you should go check his shit out, because I find it extremely compelling. Anyway, let's get into it. Hi, my name is Dan. Welcome to Dedunking. Now, right off the bat, he takes us to the oldest known megalithic site on the planet. We've got Göbekli Tepe and Karan Tepe and these places, and we've got Urfa, man. And Urfa, man, he's got his hands on his tummy, and his elbows are splayed. There's a negative space between his elbow and his arm. So anybody who's like, well, you know, this is the easiest way to carve a human's arms is to just, no, it'd be straight down. And Urfa, man, is the oldest known anthropomorphic statue of a human being. So probably not the oldest statue that ever was, almost certainly not, but very old. And they were already making these naval belly holding statues. And if you look at Karan Tepe and Göbekli Tepe, the T-shaped pillars at Göbekli Tepe in particular, they have their hands on the holding the navels. Now, there's no negative space in the arms. The arms just come straight down, easier to do. But the same general symbolism exists. They're not crossed across the chest. They're not reclined behind like this. They're not leaning. None of the other things that we see throughout human history that have been portrayed as, because these are, generally speaking, let's be clear, When somebody portrays the arms like this, it's usually an emotional thing. If I put somebody, look at the thinker, right? You don't have to do anything else. It's the position of the arms. The position of the arm in a statue can tell you what that statue has to do. Holding the stomach, in my opinion, and I'm going to put, this is not me, this, or this, excuse me, this is not Graham, this is me. In my opinion, there's a symbolism there, but we'll get into that in a minute, because Graham's got a lot to say about this stuff. And you'll notice that these statues here, both of these were found near Turkey. Both of these have their selves holding the navel. The arms are on the stomach of the statue. Even though they completely look different, they both are holding their navels. Now, when we go to Kosovo and Serbia, we also see similar stuff there. And I want to point out that this is kind of interesting. This is the oldest place on the planet that you see copper metallurgy. Now, that's kind of a big deal, right? I mean, the first place that they smelted copper is you know, kind of the beginning of the Bronze Age and all that shit, right? But it's not down in Turkey and Anatolia and Egypt and Mesopotamia. No, man, it's up in Europe. It's up in Kosovo and in Serbia. That's kind of interesting. What's more interesting is the same time that we see this stuff showing up in the record, we see those navel-holding statues show up, almost like they show up together. Around 7,500 years ago, at the same time as the earliest metallurgy that we're aware of on the planet does. It's there in Kosovo and Serbia. Like I said, it's a little bit anomalous because it's a little bit off the beaten path from what you'd expect. But there they are making the very first metallurgy on the planet. And what do they freaking have to happen alongside it? Those navel-holding statues. Now, some people might say it's a coincidence, and that's a viable alternative potentially, but I would point out that, like, you could find, if a Christian country came into a country that didn't have the same technology, you would find the cross and this new technology both showing up at the same time. So to me, this may well be what we're looking at here, and it's not just me. Graham saw the same thing. Graham saw it first. I'm just saying, hey, look over here. And you can see all of these little alien-esque little navel-holding statues that are from a very long time ago. I mean, maybe this isn't have anything to do with the other navel-holding statues on the planet, but it is very interesting that they happen to put their hands on their stomach. And there is like a social, emotional thing that's said when somebody holds their tummy. I mean, let's be clear about that. Think about it before I get to it. I'm sure that you'll start sussing it before I get there. Next, we get to Bulgaria and the Carnovo culture. And one thing I haven't really hammered at yet, but it's important to get at, is it's not just metallurgy that seems to show up with these statues. It's their ability to grow food, their ability to actually farm. And go back like Tepe, right? It was kind of the beginning of their farming. In Serbia and in Kosovo, this was the beginning of their farming at the same time they started this metallurgy. And here in Bulgaria, we have the same thing. They're starting farming at the same time as they start busting out these statues that have navel-holding hands. And it's not... They look very similar. I'll let you look. Tell me, do these statues not look at least somewhat similar in their depiction of the way that the person's standing as to the ones I've been showing you so far? You tell me. I'm not going to tell you what to think. In Iraq and Iran, we see the same thing. We see navel-holding statues showing up around the same time as they started metallurgy and they started farming. All these statues here are from like 6,000 to 5,000 BC, somewhere in there. Very, very ancient, corresponding to the beginning of metallurgy, corresponding to the beginning of them farming, and look at where their hands are. Over and over again. Not just one, not just two, not just three. Over and over again. And in Israel, we see the same thing. We see similar iconography, although with a different cultural twist, but it's very much the same. It's holding its tummy. It's clearly holding its stomach. Look at these images here. Multiples, one after the other. Thousands of BC, 35, 4500 BC, 5000 BC, over and over again. Statues that are holding its stomach, ancient as hell, corresponding to the beginning of metallurgy, the beginning of agriculture. Now, these ones from Palestine are especially interesting to me because of their, you know, they look a lot like an Egyptian sarcophagus, don't they? I mean, but look at where the hands are. It's like clearly disproportionate, like way skewed, but they've got that same kind of, I got my hands just like cocked down at this 90-degree angle over my tummy. It's a very interesting look. And you go ahead and take a quick gander at a couple of them here, and it's weird. It's weird. Now in Sardinia, it went down a little bit different. They started like cultivating their crops a couple thousand years before they started making those statues with the hands on his tummy. However, those statues do show up at the same time they start megalithic building, and the same time they start building bronze statues. Some of their bronze statues have their hands on his tummy. It's interesting. It's once again, it seems like this is part of quite possibly part of a package of technology, a package of knowledge. And when that knowledge shows up, we also see navel holding statues. The ones in Sardinia, some of them actually look like they were meant to be like spades or like stuck in the earth to dig with or a post. Now, both Greece and Cyprus show these kinds of statues here. I'm not going to get too terribly into the history of any of these, obviously, at this point, but if you look here, you can see that they're showing up at the same time as approximately at the same time as the beginnings of civilization. It seems really anomalous how quite frequently this just kind of seems to just follow the way that human history goes. Over here they do something, and then here they do something, and here they do something, and here they do something, and every time they seem to have these navel-holding statues. Again, the book's linked in the description, and I highly recommend you go give the thing a read, man. It's not too hefty as far as like the words go. A lot of images, a lot of just here's some connections. What do you guys think? And it's really, really powerful. Like, I'm working on a little series here of videos of things that are touching that cross across the world, and this was like top of the list because it's so robust. And that's on Graham. He's the one that flew around the damn world doing all this research. As a matter of fact, there are places that he couldn't go, and we'll get into that in a minute, but holy crap, dude, this is such a great mystery. I love this story. Now, when you come to Mexico, it's clear that, you know, agriculture predates the navel holding statues by a country mile. However, metallurgy, copper working, and those statues show up almost at the exact same time. And that's really interesting. Like within 100 years of each other or so in the record, you see these statues and the beginning of them making metal goods. And that is really compelling when you see the same thing on the other side of the ocean and the same type of, well, you know, they start making things with metal and they decide it's a good idea to start making statues with their hands on their tummy. Very interesting, very compelling to me that these two are potentially connected, or at the very least, you can't disregard the idea that they're connected out of hand. I mean, look at these statues, one after the other, after the other, after the other. Hands on a navel, all from Mexico. All from relatively the same time period. In Cuzco, in Peru, we see the same kinds of navel-holding statues. And as a matter of fact, we see the same thing we did in Sardinia, where they're like built to be dug into the ground. It's a very interesting little coincidence. Not only do they have the same iconography, they have this like a similar function that we're not 100% sure on exactly why they would have been stuck in the ground, but again, this is just weird, okay? This is just weird. It looks to me, and to Graham first, I'm riding his coattails here on this, but it looks to me like there's a connection. I mean, why the hell else would they be doing both of those things? Why the navel holding to begin with is like you're portraying a specific idea, and when this starts showing up with metallurgy, now that's very interesting. And when it start if it shows up with metallurgy and other things as well, it's the onus would be on the person that says those things aren't connected, in my opinion. Peru gives us a lot of gold goods that have exactly this kind of iconography. And well, I don't know if I've mentioned metallurgy to you yet so far, but gold is easier to actually smelt than copper. And here you are with a bunch of people in the beginning of their smelting of gold, and what do? They make naval holding statues. They don't make other kinds of statues. They don't make statues. I mean, they make plenty of different things, but generally speaking, they're human, they're anthropomorphic statues, have their hands on their tummies. And we have an absurd amount of stone from Peru that has naval holding statues. And that goes on into Chile, which goes on into Easter Island. The statues there also are naval holding. And this is a really interesting point to make. If you look, compare the statues at Easter Island to Göbekli Tepe, or if you compare the hands, I'm not the first guy that's done this either. It's clear. It is clear that, again, if these were 1,000 miles apart from each other, with no big fat ocean in between, nobody in the archaeological world would argue with the idea that these were connected. It's the fact that they're desperate that makes it where people are like, and I get it. I get it, man. That makes sense to be skeptical of the idea that time and space would like keep people from having the same ideas and the same iconography. However, you need to come up with a better explanation than they just came up with it on their own, because that doesn't really track when it's that fucking close to each other. So, to me, Easter Island, I've talked about Easter Island at length on my channel in the past, and links and blah, 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 but it's a crazy place. It's very interesting, and the fact, in my opinion, I would not be surprised at all if it was one of the earliest places that had some quote-unquote lost knowledge from the civilization that was snuffed by the flood, because the people at Easter Island, I mean, that watch the video. I'm not going to rehash all that shit, man. And next he mentions the tiki statues from Polynesia, and I'll go ahead and put some of these on the screen so you can see that, well, they do the exact same thing. And Graham went to Sulawesi in Indonesia, where he also saw these navel-holding statues. Almost no documentation about them, but here they are, holding their navels. When he went to Micronesia, he came across the same thing, and he actually came across a rumor that an island in the area was still making these kinds of statues, called the island's Nukuromo, or something. Buy his book, okay? There'll be stuff in there for sure. Anyway, you're welcome, Graham. Anyway, it's kind of an interesting point, because he couldn't get to this island. I mean, he could have, but it was like 2 months to get there, like 2 months to get out. It's fucking inaccessible, all right? They don't fly helicopters there. They take a boat there every so often. And when they drop your ass off there, man, you're at the mercy and whim of what's going on that island. So he didn't go. And there could be guys cranking out those statues there. There could be some old man who's freaking like his great-great-grandpa made those statues, and we've got all kinds of knowledge. There's all kinds of tantalizing possibilities that are on the island of Nukuro. Nukuro. See, that's still by his book. But seriously, The Micronesia thing's interesting as well. I mean, once again, we're looking at this same symbol fucking everywhere in the world. I've skipped places that he didn't have but just one or two. There's so many places in this book that he has just gone to and been like, you know, I saw this. And it's very interesting how often it lines up with metallurgy, with the beginning of human civilization as far as agriculture goes. Megalithic building. It's a very interesting little tie-on to all of these things, and it's almost a way that you can almost track. Because again, it starts off like you see it in the earliest places, Göbekli Tepe, Karan Tepe and shit, and then we see it all the way, potentially even in the modern day, if we can get somebody to go to this island of Now at the end, he talks about V-necks a little bit, all right? And that double V-neck, you know, I'm of the opinion that Dr. Martin Sweatman is probably onto something. So when he talks about that V symbol being a day, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this is a symbol for these guys being like doing things for more than one day, or for being timekeepers, or for something like this. Now, when he talks about his conclusion and stuff, he's talking about like symbolism of potentially an old cult and things like this. And of course, I completely agree. But I'm gonna just kind of like say what's clearly obvious here. What is the what do you think of when you think of a grown man with a big ass beard like me and a tummy holding it. Sated, happy, healthy, overly healthy, right? Santa Claus levels of overly healthy, right? The dude in Monty Python, huge tracts of land. This to me is what this naval holding statue is. It is a symbol of excess. It is a symbol of we are more than a fucking animal that ruts and just gets enough to get by today. We have so much that come the winter, we're laughing while other people are starving. We're the ant while the other guys are the grasshopper. All right, that's what I personally think. I know that's basic bitch shit and it's not very exciting as far as what the symbolism means, but we see the symbolism all across the globe, man. That's fucking exciting. I don't need to like tack on a bunch of crazy bullshit to make that cool. That's fucking cool, right? It jumps the pond. It jumps the pond before Columbus. It jumps the pond before Eric the Red. It jumps the pond Anunnaki days, right? Okay, so something's going on here. For, in my opinion, it was via Easter Island. That's like, as I've talked about before, but you get my point. Graham did a very interesting thing here. He put together a very compelling case for them to have shared information that mainstream history, mainstream archaeology would say that they couldn't have shared, because it's just not possible that they were touching each other across these ways. Now, I personally think that's bullshit. A good chunk of my followers and my subscribers think that's bullshit. But you know what? I think that Graham Langdon here has done a service to the community. He, you know, there's a lot of people that come out with something, all right? And there's a lot of people that flesh something out. Graham probably wasn't the first guy to look at these statues on Göbekli Tepe and Karan Tepe and Easter Island and be like, those look the same, similar. He was the first person to really fucking throw money at it, to spend a lot of time traveling around, do a bunch of goddamn work, write a book about it, and put it out into the world. At least the first one that I'm aware of. And it's good. It's compelling. All right? I would put it up there with megalithic clamps and megalithic stone nubs as far as ubiquity goes across the ancient world. Once it jumps the pond, boys, we are in a whole different realm. And there's something, it's like the master of animals here. When it jumps the pond, it's not like the stone nubs or the clamps. Those at least are functional. You can argue that they came up with the same idea because they had the same problem to solve. But you can't really argue that with this, because this isn't the problem that they're solving. This is just fucking, you know, they put people's hands on their tummy at the same time they started eating a lot and they started making metal. That, and not even always when they started eating a lot or when they started making metal, but quite frequently one of these things. That's very compelling to me. Anyway, his link to the book's in the description. Again, he did hook me up to proofread the thing, but he did not pay me for this. This is solely me pimping his shit, because I honestly think that he deserves a spot at the table, all right? I mean, the information that he's brought to bear here is extremely valuable and robust and powerful and other oles and stuff. Go give him some follows, all right? Archaic Lens is the name of his channel, is the name of him on Twitter and whatnot, but go buy his book. That would probably make you happier than anything else if you got that, or at the very least, go give him a follow somewhere. All right. I apologize for not taking my time to make a video last week. I've been a little bit under the weather and a little bit running my ass off. I'm going to do the best I can to keep them coming, boys. I'm an old man, but I'm not the ancientest of all. Anyway, thank you guys very much for watching and taking the time to subscribe and listen to me babble this long. And I appreciate it, and I hope to see you next time.